You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
A 29-year-old human rights campaigner from the Congo has said this: "Since the 19th century, when the world looks at Congo, it sees a pile of riches with some black people inconveniently sitting on top of them. They eradicate the Congolese people so they can possess the mines and resources. They destroy us because we are an inconvenience." The conflict in the Congo is the deadliest since World War II. Over the past decade, more than 5 million people have died and over 300,000 people have been raped. Asad Ismi is a writer specializing in U.S. policy toward the Global South and the role of Canadian corporations there. He is winner of a Project Censored Award for his article, The Ravaging of Africa, which was released in 2007 as a radio documentary series. And he joins us this morning from Toronto. Good morning, Asad, and welcome back to Red Eye.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
Can you give us a sense of what is happening right now on the ground in the eastern Congo?
Well, we have continuation of the war that started in 1998 with the invasion of the Congo by Rwanda and Uganda, which both of whom are U.S. proxies. And behind this war, which has killed 5 million Congolese, is the United States. And its imperialist desire and attempt to gain control of the rich resources of the Congo in order to make sure that Western corporations can go in there and loot these resources. So Rwanda and Uganda invaded in 1998. The ensuing conflict killed 5 million people and continuing to this day. So there was a peace agreement in 2002 that ended the war in most of the country. And however, Rwanda and Uganda did not withdraw completely. They left proxy forces in the east to make trouble for the Congolese and keep the fighting going. And this is an example of one of those proxy forces. This is General Nkunda in the east of the country, in North Kivu province. And he did not agree to the peace agreement. He did not agree to lay down his arms, and he kept on making war in the eastern Congo on behalf of the Rwandans. And to this day, he's doing that. He's really a puppet of the Rwandans. And the motive is, again, it's the U.S. really behind Rwanda. And the motive is to keep the Congolese government under pressure to accept the situation, the economic policies foisted on it by the West, to make sure that the Congolese government agrees to the looting of its resources continuing, and the Rwandans are used as a whip over the Congolese government, and they in turn act through General Nkunda in the eastern Congo.
Now, when this conflict is reported in our media, invariably it's cast in terms of tribal conflict, ethnic rivalries, ancient grievances. How accurate is that?
It's all rubbish. It's a complete lie. It is an imperialist war of looting, an imperialist war for the rich resources of the Congo, which is the richest country in Africa. And it has the biggest deposits of copper, cadmium, cobalt in the world. And also, it contains significant amounts of coltan, which you use in cell phones and laptop computers, as well as oil, diamonds, and uranium. So that is what the war is all about. That is what the looting is all about. And that's what it has always been about since 1885. When the West took over the Congo and killed 10 million people.
Now, in the recent conflict, and the role you're saying is really directed by outside forces, the United States in particular, beginning in 1996. The Mobutu government was overthrown. Could you give us a detail, a little bit, about what happened in that subsequent period when Mobutu fled from the Congo?
Right. The problem with Mobutu was he was put in power by the U.S. in 1961, and he replaced the first elected prime minister of the Congo, Patrice Lumumba, who was killed by the United States, by the CIA. And then Mobutu, the American puppet, was put in power, and he looted the country and killed many people for the next 37 years. And then he became too greedy. He wasn't sharing enough of the, or giving enough of the wealth to Western corporations, so the U.S. wanted to replace him. And they sent Uganda and Rwanda into the Congo in 1996 in order to do exactly that. And at the head of the Rwandan and Ugandan armies, they put Laurent Kabila, who was actually a Marxist and Congolese politician. So they put him there just to give it a Congolese facade. And then Laurent was put in power. But this is the nationalism of the Congolese, that even when they are puppets, they turn out to be nationalists. Because Laurent, as soon as he was in power, he told the Rwandans and the Ugandans to leave. He said, well, this is my country, so thank you for your help, and bye-bye. So the U.S. did not like this, and the Rwandans and Ugandans didn't like it, so they invaded with U.S. encouragement to take over the Congo's resources in 1998, 2 years late, 1 year later. They put Laurent in power in 1997. And then Zimbabwe, Angola, and Namibia came to the help of Laurent and the Congolese government that he had set up now. And then the war started, and it's known as Africa's First World War. And so really, Laurent was replaced, or the U.S. tried to get rid of him, because he would not agree to the looting of the Congo by Western corporations.
And subsequently, what change was there in the government when I gather Laurent Kabila was assassinated and replaced by his son.
Uh-huh. Right. So then what happened, yes, they killed him. Definitely the U.S. was involved in the assassination too. And then Joseph Kabila came to power, his Laurent's son, and he proved much more pliable than Laurent was. And he agreed to most of the Western conditions the U.S. demanded. He agreed to the looting of the country. He agreed to let the corporations in, do whatever they want. And he agreed to let the IMF and the World Bank dominate the economy, which they do today. So then the U.S. was willing to end the war in most of the country, and they signed a peace agreement with the Rwandans and the Ugandans, and the Congolese signed a peace agreement in 2002. But the U.S. does not trust Kabila completely, so they keep a whip over him through Rwanda and Rwanda's puppet in the east of the Congo, General Nkunda, and that's the situation now.
And what role is there of Canadian corporate involvement in the Congo and political machinations?
Well, it's quite extensive, because the UN issued a report in 2002, and the report said that 85 foreign multinational corporations have been pillaging the resources of the Congo during the war and continuing after that, and contributing to the conflict. And these include the big diamond company De Beers, Anglo-American, the mining giant, Barclays Bank, Bayer, Gabbert Corporation, and eight Canadian mining companies. And these are Banro Corporation, First Quantum Minerals, Kinross Gold, American Mineral Fields, International Panorama Resources, Tenke Mining, Melchior Resources, and Harambe Mining. So in total, the UN panel named 125 companies and individuals for having contributed directly or indirectly to the Congo War. And many of these, as you can see, are Canadian. And a lot of the wealth of the Congo is in mining. It's in resources that have to be mined. So Canadian companies are very very much at the forefront of in the mining field in the world. And several of them have been involved in funding military operations in exchange for lucrative mining concessions and mining contracts. And Joe Clark, the former prime minister, was an advisor to First Quantum Minerals, which has been named in this report. So it goes pretty high up into the Canadian elite. And these companies are really involved in pillaging the resources of Congo and thereby contributing to the war and financing one or both sides in the war. So when a company goes in there, it brings money and it's financing people who are involved in conflict. So it is exacerbating the conflict. It is making it much worse. And these are really, they can be interpreted as war crimes.
Now, our media not only presents the conflict as ethnic, and you've critiqued that, but when there's overt foreign involvement, it justifies that intervention as being motivated by humanitarian principles, as being selfless. What would you say about that characterization?
I would say that is another big lie of the mainstream media, because they don't look at what has been causing conflict in the Congo since 1885, and they are very ahistorical as well. So they don't even look at the imperialist interventions there and how the Rwandans and the Ugandans were encouraged and their invasion was facilitated by the U.S. They don't look at the fact that the Rwandan leader Kagame was trained in the U.S. at Fort Leavenworth in Kansas. He was trained exactly to do the kinds of things he's doing there in the Congo. And they don't look at the looting of the minerals by the Western corporations, which is all in the U.N. report. It's public knowledge. They just ignore it. So they ignore all this history. They ignore all the imperialist involvement and invasions of the Congo, and they create a fantasy, a fable of Western goodness. Somehow, in their minds, it's always the Africans who are fighting with each other for who knows what reason, and so it's simply because they're African, and that they've always been fighting, apparently, and the West is always going in there to rescue them from themselves. So this is a complete lie. If you look at history, the West has always been exploiting and murdering Africans. And the media are corporations, just like the mining companies, and they are part of the Western corporate structure. So, of course, they would lie about that and hide it.
You mentioned earlier the strength of nationalism among the Congolese people. More generally, how would you characterize the resistance that the Congolese people have been demonstrating to this foreign invasions and plundering of their wealth?
I think it's been very impressive, because the U.S. plan, when they sent in the Rwandans and the Ugandans in 1998, was to split the Congo, balkanize it into four or five countries, and then which would make it easier to loot the riches. And the Congolese have mounted a very spirited resistance, a very impressive resistance, and they did not let that happen. So in spite of being oppressed by Mobutu for 37 years, who was a U.S. puppet, they still fought back very effectively and saved their country from disintegration. The Congo today is one country, and it's the second biggest country in Africa. The U.S. was not able to split off even one province of it, not even one part of it. So that was a very brave and courageous resistance. And now they need to take back their resources as well, take back their minerals from Western pillage, and they have started the process of that as well. Even though the present government of Kabila is corrupt, it has many bad elements in it, they have still been put under a lot of public pressure to start the process of looking again at the mining contracts which they've signed with companies, so reviewing those. And under public pressure, they've been forced to do that. So that process is not finished yet, and it might not result in anything substantial, but it's very impressive that public pressure has forced the government to do that.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Asad.
Not at all. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Right.
I've been speaking with Asad Ismi. He is a writer on international politics specializing in U.S. policy toward the global south and the role of Canadian corporations in the south as well.